Dissonance Media and the Other Stories presents. Step into the abyss of After the Gloaming, a gothic fiction podcast that delves into the depths of human emotion. Unyielding love, revenge, internal struggles, and restless souls await you in 9 haunting episodes, where dread, fear, and rare glimpses of eerie happiness linger. Dare to listen on your favorite podcatcher? After the Gloaming beckons. Search now, but beware. Innocence will be left behind.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And now, the Story Studio Hawk and Cleaver presents The Witching Hour.
The Witching Hour is brought to you by the Mysteries to Die For podcast. It starts with a body. Suspects line up. All have motive, but which one killed? Mysteries to Die For is the podcast for mystery lovers. Season 3 contains the first stories of series detectives like Sherlock Holmes, Monsieur Lecoq, and Hercule Poirot. Can you find the killer before these masters stage their grand reveals? Subscribe to Mysteries to Die For wherever you get your podcasts and put your skills to the test. That's the Mysteries to Die For podcast.
The Addict, written by Kev Harrison, performed by Georgia Cook.
Silvery flames lick the night sky, casting dancing shadows over the masked figures in the circle. Rabbit ears stand to attention on the opposite side of the bonfire. Jo wonders what nightmares her mind might have conjured had she come for the ritual with the habitual junk coursing through her veins. Overhead, the clouds part as if on cue. The moon glows bold and bright. From her right, a man in a camouflage mask passes Jo a wooden bowl. She watches the almost metallic flames glisten on the surface of the liquid as it sloshes around in the receptacle. She sniffs it, puzzled by the foul scent, before taking a long swallow and passing it on to her left. A shudder works its way through Jo's fragile body as the pungent brew takes effect. She wipes her mouth with the back of her hand, silvery scar tissue on her wrists and between her fingers shimmer in the firelight. Midnight strikes and the ritual begins.
We gathered souls.
Call to those eternal. Heed our pleas, this time infernal. Grant those worthy with your boundless power. Their hearts desire this witching hour. And those whose metal may not suffice. May you claim their lives in sacrifice. A bolt of lightning shoots from the cloudless sky, striking the fire and enraging the silvery flames. It's time. Jo spins and is about to step forward when she notices her senses are untethered, eyes struggling to focus. She pauses, lazily allows her eyelids to close. Tonight is the night. Go back. Right the wrong. Start afresh. J just like in the dream. She speaks the mantra in her mind and believes it this time. She opens her eyes once more, sharper now, and strides ahead with renewed purpose. Long grass and errant brambles whip and claw at her bare calves, though she barely notices as she marches onward, desperate to find the hollow tree from the dream that drew her back here after all this time. As the crackle of the bonfire dies away, she tunes into the twin beats of her trainers on the forest floor. The rhythm is hypnotic, seconds stretching into minutes, before the grasping limbs of trees and bushes ghost away to nothing. Instinctively, she pauses. The clearing. A near-perfect circle, some 10 meters across, the trees and bushes at its edge are bent and broken at unnatural angles, as though held back by some invisible force. Calla lilies dot the perimeter, lending the space a funerary mood, while in the centre stands the thick, gnarled form of a towering yew. At the heart of the tree's trunk gapes the hollow, the mouth of darkness. Jo steps tentatively forward, squinting to make out where the darkness ends. She's about to step inside, when something shifts through the forest beyond the clearing in her peripheral vision. Digging into her pocket, she pulls out her phone with trembling hands and turns on the flashlight app. Hello? She swings the arc of light back and forth, bare branches casting skeletal hands and shadows across the trunks of distant oaks. Get a hold of yourself, Joanna. She sashes the phone and takes a breath, eyes forward into the darkness. She reaches out with a bony hand and steps across the threshold. Jo takes another step, then another, convinced the tree wasn't big enough for it to be possible, then freezes, her whole body enveloped in inky darkness. So, I wonder how this is supposed to work. Her heart races uncontrollably and the ground rises up to meet her. Jo breathes deep and squints against the bright lights in the venue. Radioactive by the Kings of Leon is pouring from the PA with too much bass, and she pauses for a moment to think how utterly unremarkable the song is. She glances down at her left arm, then the right, amazed by the unblemished skin, the fullness of the muscle tissue. It fucking worked. I can't believe... A squeal of feedback wrenches her attention back to the moment. Stig Carlson is yards away on stage, his soundtrack just completed. He looks down into the crowd area. Their eyes meet, and his stony face softens for a moment into a hint of a smile. He coils the snaking cable of his microphone around the stand and leaves stage left. Noticing the security door to the backstage area is unmanned, Jo sees her opportunity. She stalks across and pushes the bar, waits momentarily for an alarm. When none sounds, she hurries down the monotone grey corridor towards the dressing rooms. 20 yards down, the flickering yellow of the corridor strip lights give way to an indigo night sky, 2 sodium lamps eating into it with halos of orange. Carlson leans against the wall, joint in hand. Jo feels he senses her presence, but Carlson doesn't turn, instead taking a long toke and blowing out a cloud of thick smoke. He holds out the hand with the joint, still not meeting Joe's eye. She shuffles on the spot, thinking it over, before giving in. She reaches forward and takes the spliff, bringing it to her lips for a long drag.
Do I know you from somewhere?
Jo throws her mind back down the blurred tunnel of the last 10 years and comes up empty. This was it. The night she met him. The gig, the after show, the hotel room, the first needle flooding her veins with the ecstatic bliss of her first hit, and the high she's been chasing ever since. I don't think so, she says. Even her voice is different, softer somehow.
Would you like to know me better?
He turns to face her now, mouth turned up into a grin. I don't...
Don't be shy about it. Why else did you follow me out here?
Hurried footsteps make their way from the corridor, and a rasping voice says, Stig, you're on in 5 minutes. Want me to... Hello, who are you?
She's a friend. Gonna hang out with us later, aren't you? What was your name?
Joanna. Joe, I don't think...
Ryan, will you go see if...
Joe hears nothing else that Stig says, as the details of how this all began are painted onto the blank canvas of her substance-addled mind. Ryan. It was always fucking Ryan. You look tense, love. Have a bit of this. Ryan reaches out and presses the uncapped hip flask to Joe's lips. Don't drink the... Too late. Everything fades to black. Sitting up from the fetal position, Jo spits pine needles and leaf detritus from her chapped lips. As she stands, she sees the tram lines which still extend from her elbows to her wrists. It didn't work. Nothing's changed. Jo pauses on the edge of the tree hollow. Something has changed. Like a heavy veil has been removed from her eyes. Now she knows who is responsible for all of it. Every attempt to get clean, every chance for a fresh start snuffed out by Ryan and his stockpile of poisons. She turns her head one way, then the other, her visual cortex struggling to keep up with the movement. Stepping out into the clearing, the distant glow of the bonfire beckons to her. With a newfound purpose, she stalks forward, trying to focus on the seasickness she supposes has come from the visit to her past self. As her feet trample over the brambles and ferns, she digs the fingernails of one hand into her palm, the pain sharpening her mind and her resolve. The curling fingers of tree branches and ankle-biting tendrils of bracken fade into obscurity as she rediscovers the shameful secrets the bastard has been hiding from her all this time. She plants her right foot on uneven ground and snaps back into the moment. Inches ahead, the earth gives way to the gaping mouth of what looks like an old quarry. She creeps back from the edge, breathing suddenly heavy. Stay focused, Joanna. We'll find Ryan, and then we'll fucking murder him.
That's not friendly.
A familiar voice from behind. Jo spins on her heels, almost losing her footing, and sees a man in the shadow. He's dressed in black combat boots and a matching hoodie. His mask is hewn from dull grey metal, with four slender strips of illuminated neon in pink, blue, green, and yellow. He shuffles to one side, and the trails left by the neon seem to drag through the air in slow motion, turning Joe's stomach.
"Can I offer you a drink?"
he says, pulling the hip flask from his pocket. "Go fuck yourself!" He unscrews the cap, tips the flask upside down theatrically. "Oh, that's right. You've already had one. I've already added my own secret ingredients to the ritual potion. Thought it might make things a bit more interesting." He brings an extended forefinger to his lips and winks. "Don't tell Stick, eh?" Ryan goes to fasten the hip flask, but his fingers slip and the cap falls into the long grass. Jo sees her chance and bounds forward, hurling herself into him and knocking him to the ground. They land on the sodden earth with a thud. Jo reaches for his neck with one hand, scrabbling behind her for something heavy with the other. Ryan struggles, about to break free, when Jo's searching hand finds a flat pebble. She closes her fingers around it and, screaming, brings it around to strike his masked face. She hits him again, then once more, before the blue neon on his left cheek fizzes and bursts. The stone slips from her hands, bouncing away into the bushes. Jo takes her eyes from Ryan and instantly regrets it. He brings his knee up into her abdomen and rolls her onto her back. The now dented mask looms over her. She imagines the satisfied smile on his face behind it, and rage boils inside her. "I may not have changed it when I went back, but I know now. I know it was you who sent me down this path, you cunt!" She twists one way, then the other, trying to wiggle free, but he's too strong and too heavy. Placing a wide palm on her chest, he manoeuvres his knees to her shoulders, pinning her to the ground. "Sent you," Ryan says, turning his head and murmuring, as though considering it.
"I think I prefer..."
"Led you. Controlled you. You've been my toy, Joe. My puppet. But now... now I'm tired of this game. And you fucked up my mask." He reached down to his thigh and unsheathed the hunting knife. "You're broken, Joe. Beyond repair. You think you actually went back to when this all started? This is going to be a mercy killing." Joe kicks out with her legs now, breath short, desperate. She growls, almost animal. You'll fucking get yours, Ryan. Whether it's me or someone else, you've got it. Ryan places his palm across her mouth, muffling her, then lowers his masked face to hers. Don't make me lose my temper, or this will be slow and painful. Joe strikes upward with a knee and connects with his groin. He howls, rolling to the side. She scrambles to her feet, trying to control her sobbing. She aims a kick to Ryan's ribs, then another. As she swings for a third, he grabs her foot and forces her back against a tree. Seemingly taking no chances now, Ryan wraps his left hand around Joe's throat and raises the knife in his right. Before he can thrust the point forward, a shape bursts from the trees. Ryan's stabbing arm goes limp while Joe's bare skin is warm and wet. She glances downward, shudders. Blood. So much blood. A small axe or hatchet protrudes from Ryan's shoulder joint, his face a perfect amalgamation of surprise and horror. He sags to one side, and Joe shuffles clumsily around the tree and into the brush. The man with the jewel mask, half of it now pulsing with the silver flames at the heart of the ritual, crouches, looping his left arm around Ryan's neck. He prizes the knife from Ryan's fingers and plunges it into his back over and over. Joe scrambles as far as she can from the carnage, until her back thuds against the bark of a thick tree trunk. Nowhere to go. Something inside prevents her from closing her eyes as the man with the knife takes a handful of Ryan's hair and hacks into the bastard's neck. The sound of the blade slicing through meat and snapping cartilage brings bile to the back of her throat. The killer grips the severed head like a trophy, then turns to face Joe. He stalks forward, fingers closed tightly around the knife handle. "Please," she says, before the sobbing takes over. The man pauses, eyes fixed on Joe's wrist. His gaze traces the lines that traverse Joe's arm before coming to rest on her own tear-filled eyes. "Please don't," he mutters, something Joe doesn't hear over her own cries, before unceremoniously kicking Ryan's body over the precipice of the quarry and hurling the head into the bushes. Before she can make it out, something rustles in the bushes ahead. Some creature scared from cover, and as quickly as he appeared, the man is gone, sprinting in the direction of the fire. Trembling, Jo clambers to her feet, her shaking legs almost collapsing beneath her. She stumbles on towards the bonfire. She hears distant, incoherent voices, then a gunshot.
The Witching Hour is a production of the story studio Hawk and Cleaver, directed by Andy Conduit-Turner. Tonight's episode, The Addict, was written by Kev Harrison and performed by Georgia Cook. Music, sound and editing are all from Duncan Muggleton, with additional sound effects from freesound.org. Our entire series is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, which, as any schoolchild will tell you, means don't sell it, don't edit it, don't marry it for kind of weird tax evasion purposes, but you can share it as much as you'd like. Until next time.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.